Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. Our guest host today is Jan Spencer, bringing with him insights and guidance about sustainability and what he calls paradigm shift. Jan has been at this for some decades, observing others moving towards sustainability, learning various systems, ideas, and techniques to support the transition, and experimenting with it on his own suburban property in Eugene, Oregon. We have Jan here for Spirit in Action every 3 months, and he's helping me today as I put a lot of my time into collecting sap and making maple syrup this time of year, cooking up around 4 gallons of it right now. Today, Jan's got a few different topics and treats for you, but I'll let him introduce those, and together we'll move toward paradigm shift with Jan Spencer. All yours, Jan.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here with you on Spirit in Action Radio. This is Jan Spencer coming to you from Eugene, Oregon. In this contribution to Spirit in Action Radio, I'd like to describe a few aspects of a primer for paradigm shift, in particular, the wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions. And then we'll segue into a look at several organizations that empower young people, that teach them values, skills, and self-confidence that lead to action that totally fit within the realm of paradigm shift to create a very different future than the past experienced by their parents and grandparents. And then I'd like to share an article I just read in The Guardian that describes a town in the San Francisco Bay Area that is set to lose its largest single employer and source of tax revenue. What if the loss of that refinery catalyzed an interest by that town to pursue paradigm shift instead of more consumer culture? Stay tuned. Let's start today's program with a short orientation, a primer for paradigm shift. First, a primer is a small book that explains a new or unfamiliar subject or set of ideas. As used in this radio program, paradigm shift means the purposeful movement towards a society that takes care of its needs within the boundaries of the natural world, that society would place a high value on uplift of the spirit and civic culture, and that society would be served by an honest and responsible economic system. The primer has a website and a radio program. Think of the website as a book. Think of the radio program as a class that comes in two parts. Those parts can stand alone, but they are intimately related, and they are based on the book or the website. One part of the radio program I call On the Way. The other part I call On the Ground. On the Way describes the ideals, the vision, and principles of paradigm shift. On the Ground describes the ideals, the vision, and principles of paradigm shift as they are applied to the real world. These are fascinating stories of real-life paradigm shift. Both 28-minute parts on the radio can be found as podcasts on my website, aprimerforparadigmshift.org. The primer is available to other Pacifica Radio Station Network members by way of audio port. Paradigm shift is not a complicated future utopia. Rather, appreciable amounts of paradigm shift can exist in the here and now. Paradigm shift is common sense. paradigm shift as practical choices of how we manage our own time and money as individuals, families, friends, neighbors, communities, and beyond. These early initiatives of paradigm shift are the hopeful building blocks of a far more expansive social, political, economic, and environmental transformation. Very good. Let's shift our attention to those organizations that provide those young people with experience and skills that can be applied to paradigm shift. Even though those organizations don't frame their content as paradigm shift, we'll take a look at the School Garden Project in Eugene, the Onondaga Earth Corps in Syracuse, New York, the Rachel Carson Academy in Eugene. We'll take a look at a middle school class in my own neighborhood, and its focus is teaching kids about civic engagement. And we'll take a look at the Sustainability Merit Badge. Let's put today's episode into a bit of historical context. The baby boomers, and I'm one of them, hit the sweet spot in history. That sweet spot was simply good timing, being born in the wake of World War II. Resources were plentiful. It was the early years of the consumer culture, the heyday of the American dream. Factories were shifting production from war to cars and washing machines. The social engineering of Edward Bernays and colleagues was surging with shopping centers, popular entertainment, and suburban development. Few people were thinking about the limits to growth. What about the timing of today's young people? Will they be known as the baby doomers, ill-fated with bad timing, captive on the downslope of the American dream, defaulted to the tart spot in history? Or will they self-empower and take a very different direction towards sustainability and uplift to become the baby bloomers? The world these youngsters are growing up in will not be like their parents and grandparents. Current environmental, economic, and social trends and conditions are neither sustainable or desirable. We have global climate change, and here in the U.S., we have the financial assets of the richest 3.5 million people exceeding the financial assets of the least well-off 170 million people by 13 times. Even at this nation's near high tide of wealth and affluence, a growing number of people are having a hard time paying their bills and resenting those who can. The ideals and skills taught by the organizations described in this episode, and there are untold thousands of others all over the country, offer a hope for the next generation, a hopeful opportunity to chart a healthy and radical change towards a society that can take care of its needs within the boundaries of the natural world, build a civic culture, and uplift the spirit. Our entire society would do well to support these youth-positive organizations so they can expand the critical work they're already doing. Our society, young, old, and in between, would also do well to make acquaintance with the wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions. All the values and ideals these youth organizations dedicate to young people fit perfectly into the wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions. This wisdom is care for the natural world, uplift of the spirit, service to the community, modesty of lifestyle, and accountability for our actions. These ideals and values can replace the consumer culture's excess, distractions, vanity, and social engineering. This wisdom can serve the transformation of consumer to citizen, the movement towards sustainability, civic culture, and an uplifted society. This wisdom can help young people take a leading role in paradigm shift. Okay, let's hear how these organizations explain what they're doing from their own websites. And after 5 or 6 descriptions, we'll assess and share some thoughts. I think all these organizations consider themselves agents of change. The hope is they can become more aware of just how important they are and how they can make their important work even more powerful. The School Garden Project, Eugene, Oregon. The School Garden Project in Eugene is a small nonprofit. The following comes from the School Garden Project's website. The School Garden Project of Lane County formed in 2001 to help establish gardens and provide resources, professional consultation, and educational programs to local schools. Our main goals and objectives are to increase children's science knowledge, to assist children in making healthy eating choices, to teach children to be good stewards of the earth, and to strengthen their confidence through collaboration and cooperation with their fellow students. The SGP's lessons reinforce reading and vocabulary skills and teach basic gardening. Lessons are designed to encourage learning while having fun. We connect children to the natural world, guiding them to understand the importance of a healthy environment. Our science in the garden lessons encourage exploration and curiosity. We teach strong leadership, personal responsibility, and gentle respect when we work together in the garden. We're helping to grow our future engineers, scientists, teachers, farmers, and parents. Next, the Onondaga Earth Corps in Syracuse, New York. The mission of the Onondaga Earth Corps is to empower youth to be active participants in creating positive change for themselves, their communities, and the environment. We envision a future where young people are equipped with the skills, opportunities, and support to thrive as leaders, change makers, and advocates for environmental sustainability. The OEC seeks to build a world of inclusivity, respect, and equal opportunity where every individual has the tools to succeed and make a meaningful impact on their community. The OEC offers programs for youth and young adults. Youth programs include public outreach, educational development, neighborhood demonstration projects, tree planting and maintenance, conservation, and personal development. Young adults work towards creating livable, sustainable communities through service and outreach, while enhancing professional and personal goals. Young adults develop life skills and professional growth through formal lessons and on-the-job training. In my own words, I describe some items I saw on the OEC website. The OEC newsletter offers participants the opportunity to share their experiences. Writing articles is a great skill-building exercise, and it also lets people enjoy other people's stories and build camaraderie. One young lady described her challenges to public speaking, while others described the particularly high level of satisfaction planting trees in weather that was windy, cold, and wet. One participant described her experience as empowering, and she had a great feeling of satisfaction seeing the work she and others had accomplished. The Onondaga Earth Corps recognizes the need for fun and celebration. There are events planned for the end of the fall project season and the end of the year to recognize individual accomplishments, cooperative work done, and support from the community, and anticipation for more civic engagement. A middle school civics class here in Eugene, Oregon. This next entity is not an organization. It's a class in a neighborhood middle school. The following is my own account of this very positive initiative. Let me put this communication between the school teacher and our neighborhood association into context. I'm on the board of my neighborhood association. We exist to make our neighborhood a better place to live for everyone. We have meetings, we have organized events, we offer educational programs, we collaborate with the city and civic-minded people and groups. Our issues range from traffic and development to affordable housing, the environment, social justice, human rights, and emergency preparedness. That all comes down to building civic culture. Elsewhere in the primer, I describe more about connecting with allies and assets in the neighborhood and the wider community, and our neighborhood association itself is an ally and asset to the community. Our neighborhood board had an email several weeks ago from a woman who teaches at a middle school here in the neighborhood. She introduced herself and explained she had a class that seeks to teach her students personal responsibility and to engage with the wider community. She was reaching out to our neighborhood association to find out how her students could become more involved with the neighborhood. My own reaction was immediate. I was excited to connect with her and her class because young people participating in civic affairs is critical to paradigm shift. I quickly emailed back and told her, "Thank you for your reaching out and let's connect." A week later, two of us from the board met with the teacher, and we had a wonderful discussion. We found out the class had already taken on projects like mentoring younger kids at the elementary school next door. The class had been involved with a food drive and school garden that produced veggies for those in need. They had helped do litter pickup around the school and were keen to take on more expansive projects. Good timing. Our neighborhood association is organizing an event, and we are inviting the class to participate in that event. They'll help with setup and takedown, but also they'll help to manage a container garden kit distribution and also have a table space to explain what their class is about. And the teacher has written a short article for our neighborhood association's monthly email newsletter describing the class and the class interest in neighborhood engagement. In a future episode of On the Ground, A Primer for Paradigm Shift, I'll have an update about this wonderful new relationship. Next, the Rachel Carson Academy. Another Eugene entity that is youth-focused is the Rachel Carson Environmental Science Academy. The academy is nested in one of Eugene's public high schools, but it's a separate entity. The Rachel Carson Academy is more about experience in the wider world than classroom learning. The curriculum integrates the environment, science, social studies, and language arts, using watersheds as the central theme. The Academy offers students the chance to learn a balanced, in-depth understanding of the natural environment and to apply knowledge and skills they learn to real-world situations to create positive change within the school and nearby environments. The program is dedicated to promoting partnerships with the community that result in a shared commitment to stewardship and a sense of responsibility to the natural world. Next is my own narration of the Sustainability Merit Badge in the Scouting Program. Like many boomers, the Scouts was a big part of my wonder years. I can still recite the Scout ideals from memory. A scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. I didn't need to look at anything to recite all that. Even now, I score pretty well on most of those ideals. My own scout career was unremarkable. I attained first class, and admittedly, I was into it for the camping. I did a bit of research about the scouts on behalf of this program. I was very pleased to learn there is a sustainability merit badge in the scouts. Gaining rank in the scouts is based on earning a wide range of merit badges. To earn a merit badge, the scout has to satisfy that badge's requirements of topical research, actions, and proficiency, and then be tested by a merit badge counselor, an adult with familiarity with the content of that particular merit badge. So, with great interest, I had a look. What does it take to earn the sustainability merit badge? I was pleasantly surprised. To earn the sustainability merit badge, a scout must show proficiency with many of the following questions and topics. Here's a short summary. What is sustainability and why is that important? The scout also needs to have a knowledge of water, its use at home, water from its source to the tap, and water management and conservation. The scout needs to understand food choices, such as the comparison between a plant-based diet and a meat-based diet. The scout can be asked, what might a sustainable community look like? And assess one's own home sustainability. The scout can explain what are the attributes of different energy sources and how can the scout's family reduce energy usage. The scout addresses the topic of stuff in terms of sustainability and if the scout himself or herself has too much stuff. The scout needs to know about products and life cycles, the relationship between population and sustainability, and how does climate change fit in with our own lifestyles. And then, towards the end, the scout needs to identify 5 behavioral changes for the scout and family for becoming more sustainable. And then, last, what are career areas related to sustainability? Those are a lot of relevant topics to the question of sustainability. Given the state of the nation and the world, one would think there has never been a time in history with more reasons for humans to make a purposeful leap forward in its collective evolution, to find its place within the natural world and living in peace with each other. No category of people has more to gain from making this upward leap than the young people of today. Along with the deepening downward trends, there have never been so many allies and assets for those young people to work with to make that leap. All of those groups mentioned earlier are already a part of this transformation in the early going. None of those groups mention paradigm shift, but in fact, they are all engaged in paradigm shift. The stories described earlier touch on many small examples of paradigm shift. A teacher is offered the opportunity to create a program for kids to greatly expand their imaginations and skills by connecting with the wider world. Kids learn about the value of self-care and working with others. Kids learn about the wonders of nature and how they can protect those wonders. The sustainability merit badge can bring about a paradigm shift merit badge. The young people in the civics class will be important participants for our upcoming neighborhood event, which also has a strong paradigm shift agenda. and that civics class can be replicated widely in other schools. The young people involved with the groups and opportunities described earlier can transform their own homes, lives, and neighborhoods and inspire yet more young people and adults towards sustainability and uplift. The youth touched by these programs and thousands of other young people and kindred programs all over the country can become bloomers, not doomers. They can advocate paradigm shift and find their place within the growing movement towards sustainability and uplift. The organizations mentioned here and their kindreds all over the country deserve financial support. And those kids deserve enthusiastic encouragement from friends and family. Those kids should make best use of those wonderful opportunities. Kudos to all those organizations and thousands of others doing similar work on behalf of young people and their communities. Okay, Mark, time for a break.
Okay, Jan, we'll make it a short break to remind you all that you're listening to Spirit in Action, guest hosted today by Jan Spencer while I'm cooking maple syrup. You can find all about Spirit in Action and our other program, Song of the Soul, on our website, northernspiritradio.org. All kinds of goodies there, including links to Jan and all his stuff, as well as to all our guests of the past 20-plus years. And you can listen to those interviews with activists and musicians, and please remember to comment on the shows when you visit and give us pointers on what we can improve, guests we could have, and much more. Remember, we are syndicated on 37-plus stations across the USA, and we have the links to them on our site. And maybe we're not yet broadcasting in your town, but you'd like to have us. Let's work together on this. Please do support your local news sources, like the community radio stations that carry our type of show, and please donate to Northern Spirit Radio to assure our sustainability. Enough about me. Back to you, Jan.
Thanks, Mark. For the second part of A Primer for Paradigm Shift here at Spirit in Action, I'd like to share a fascinating story about an oil refinery. The story comes from Benicia, a small town in the northeast corner of the San Francisco Bay Area, and its approaching loss of an oil refinery. The refinery has served as a vital source of well-paid employment and tax revenue in Benicia for over two generations. I want to read most of an article from The Guardian dated March 1st, 2026 that describes a variety of conditions and opinions in Benicia related to the loss of the refinery and how the community might cope. There is a very strong paradigm shift element to this story. The Primer and many other thoughtful sources advise our society and economic system are not ecologically sustainable in terms of resources and energy use. We buy, consume, and throw away far too much stuff. One could add this consumer culture and its celebration of vanity and excess is not good for the human spirit and the betterment of humanity anyway. After about 14 minutes to read the article, we move from real life to fiction. What if Benicia, in its dilemma about how to respond to the refinery closing, decided to pursue paradigm shift? In our remaining time, we'll take a closer look at paradigm shift actions Benicia might consider. Okay, I'm starting to read the article. From many vantage points, it's easy to forget the city is home to a massive 900-acre oil refinery. Its imposing sprawl of stacks, holding tanks, and billowing steam hidden from view. But for nearly 60 years, the refinery has loomed over every aspect of life in Benicia, exerting outsized influence on its economy and politics while posing serious risks to public health. The Benicia Oil Refinery, which the Texas oil company Valero bought from Exxon in 2000, thrived in an era when fossil fuels reigned largely unchecked over the U.S., offering reliable local taxes, well-paying jobs, and steady economic opportunities for the many small businesses in its orbit. But as California pivots to meet its ambitious clean energy goals, refineries like this one are on the decline. The state has pledged it will be carbon neutral by 2045, dramatically reducing its dependence on fossil fuels. Last April, the multi-billion dollar company announced plans to idle, restructure, or cease operations within a year, citing California's tough regulatory and enforcement environment. The company confirmed in January it would begin winding down operations and permanently idle most processing units by April, laying off nearly 70% of its payroll, about 240 employees in the process. The move, in effect, seals Benicia's fate as a post-refinery city, positioning it as a reluctant test case of whether a place long defined by the oil and gas industry can successfully reinvent itself. News of the potential closure sent shockwaves through this small, relatively affluent community of approximately 28,000 people in Solana County on the northeastern edge of the San Francisco Bay Area. The closure of the refinery, Benicia's largest employer and the source of nearly 20% of its tax revenue, could have a catastrophic impact on the city's financial stability. The company also has funded sports teams, community programs, and nonprofits. That future holds mixed feelings depending on who you're talking to. Some local leaders envision Valero's exit as a once-in-a-generation opportunity for the city to increase housing at dramatic scale and lure cleaner commercial and industrial enterprises. Things are still very much in flux, and it still feels like the city of Benicia's future is yet to be determined, said Kari Birdseye, a city council member with a reputation for standing up to the company. I would like Benicia to become a poster child for a just transition for other refinery cities. But others, including business owners and plant workers, are less enthusiastic. I've lost a lot of customers, said Chantel Sprankle, owner of Sprankle's Deli, a homey sandwich shop that's long been a mainstay of Benicia's downtown. We have a lot of regulars and a lot of friends that work for Valero. I probably know 75% of them by name. Like many other restaurants, hotels, and industrial supply businesses here, the deli relies heavily on the patronage of refinery workers and executives, some of whom have already skipped town ahead of the facility's now imminent shutdown. Sprankle puts the blame squarely at the state, arguing that California's ambitious climate goals and oversight rules cut into the company's bottom line, hastening its departure. I'm sorry, but we're all in the business to make money. Let Valero make money, she said. They're taking care of our community. Now what's going to happen? All these people are out of jobs. I hope that we can make it, she said, her voice catching. I'm sorry to get emotional, but Valero leaving is the worst possible thing that could happen to our little community. I'm still reading the article. The city's challenges expose a broader obstacle in California's effort to transition to a clean fuel economy by 2045. The state has reduced its gasoline consumption considerably over the last 20 years by more than 15%, or about 2 billion gallons per year. But the pace of that reduction hasn't matched the steep decline in refining capacity amid a steady exodus of processing facilities in recent decades. The Benicia plant, one of only 9 remaining gasoline-producing facilities in a state that once had dozens, processes about 145,000 barrels of crude oil a day, accounting for nearly 9% of California's total production. But with gasoline still in high demand, the closures have compounded fears of price spikes and fuel shortages. That, in turn, has led the state's governor, Gavin Newsom, a likely presidential contender, to soften his tone toward an industry he once attacked. As the closures loomed, state leaders scrambled to save the refinery, even considering paying Valero up to $200 million to cover routine maintenance costs. But many of those amenities are funded in part by the property taxes Valero pays, saddling the mayor and other city leaders with the unenviable task of trying to raise local taxes and identifying potential cuts to everything from the public pool to the Christmas tree lighting ceremony. "It's an existential moment for our community," Young said. For all its economic benefits, the refinery has for decades exposed the community to serious health and safety risks. The city has the highest cancer and asthma rates in the county, with downwind residents consistently exposed to toxic emissions and sidelined by intermittent fires and flaring incidents. In 2024, regional and state air regulators fined Valero a record $82 million for secretly exceeding toxic emission standards for more than 15 years, spurring speculation that the heavy sanction played into the company's move to announce closure plans roughly 6 months later. Any similar hint of uplift is notably absent at the Plumbers and Steamfitters Local 343 Union Hall and Training Facility in nearby Vacaville. "It's doom and gloom from the rank-and-file members. They're very upset," said Steve McCall, the business manager of the union, whose workers are often hired as contractors during maintenance shutdowns at the refinery. The 500-member union trains about 75 apprentices at a time, dispatching them to install and maintain high-pressure piping systems at residential and industrial facilities in the region, including hospitals and power plants. But many members only wanted to work at the refinery, and about 10% have left the union since Valero's announcement, McCall said. For decades, he said, the refinery provided its members with steady work and high wages. They could earn anywhere from $30 an hour as an apprentice to upward of $70 an hour as a journeyman. For skilled tradesmen willing to work in difficult and sometimes dangerous conditions, steady gigs at industrial sites like the refinery offered a direct path to the middle class. "Work hard and you can make 6 figures, McCall said, pointing to the soldering stations, welding equipment, and piping displays at the union's expansive new training warehouse. The refinery's impending closure comes as the Budweiser plant in Fairfield and the Mare Island dry dock in nearby Vallejo, an extension of the former shipyard, have also recently ceased operations, further shrinking industrial employment opportunities in the county. "When we lose pillars like that, how else do people live here?" McCall said. "People need to afford homes. If you can't work here and you have to drive 2 hours, it becomes untenable." very good on finished reading. In sum, the Guardian article describes how the refinery provided well-paying jobs and taxes that helped support a high quality of life in Benicia. Individuals, interest groups, elected officials, and business owners all have different opinions about the refinery, both pro and con. In the real world, the likely course of action for the city of Benicia will be a mix of economic development, pursue new revenue sources, and cost-cutting to offset the refinery loss, while the citizens remain spectators and are asked to submit to the same economic forces that have caused the refinery problem in the first place. But let's pretend the closing of the refinery catalyzed a call for a community conversation to discuss a post-refinery option for Benicia based on sustainability, citizen empowerment, and building civic culture. These actions could range from friends and neighbors creating mutual assistance clusters to mixed-use redevelopment on multi-acre suburban parking lots. Citizen and city partnerships are essential for creating a post-refinery Benicia. In Benicia, this call for discussion showed many people realized investing so much time, money, heart, and soul into a non-sustainable economic system and way of life that depended on overconsumption of energy and resources, damage to the environment, and lost human potential was not in the best interest of their family, friends, community, and the environment. The closing of the refinery had presented Benicia with a wonderful opportunity to reinvent itself, to become a poster child of not only a post-refinery town, but also a town on the cutting edge of legitimate sustainability. A steep shift in consciousness could reset Benicia's aspirations towards real sustainability and paradigm shift. The closing of the refinery has caused many people to take a deep breath and realize their own consumer culture lifestyles are the cause of nearly all of society's familiar social, economic, political, and environmental problems, even though they realize moving towards sustainability would be an enormous challenge to their own lifestyles, their food choices, housing, transportation, employment, relationships, time, money, and much more. A lot of consumer stuff would be traded for deeper social relationships, engagement in the community, and mutual assistance. Such an ambitious initiative would call on an unprecedented partnership between the city and Benicia's greatest resource, its own citizens, young, old, and in between. The move towards real sustainability could be well worth the effort. Many people in Benicia want a public meeting to talk about how ideas and benefits of sustainability could look in their own lives, neighborhoods, businesses, education, city policy, and land use. Changes could start slowly, but would grow deeper over the coming several years and beyond. No one would be compelled to make these changes for sustainability. People could move at their own pace, but the overall plan would be ambitious. There's a strong belief these changes will need to be made sooner or later, nationwide, no matter what, because the consumer culture is not sustainable. Better to make these changes now, by choice, than an increasingly uncertain future. Important to know, a small but appreciable number of people in Solana County have been advocating sustainability for years. Those pioneers could be invaluable educational resources for the entire community. Station Break. You have been listening to a fiction story based on Benicia. a real town that expects to lose its largest employer and a big chunk of its tax base, an oil refinery. Benicia can serve as an example for other towns and cities, fiction story or not, to address their own paradigm shift challenges as more and more people and places in the real world are confronted by the inevitable economic downslope of the non-sustainable consumer culture. The following content is intended for both the fiction story about Benicia and the real world. It is a very basic preface for moving towards sustainability. My website, aprimerforparadigmshift.org, has more detail and will add still more content. Transition Towns is another source of strategies and actions relating to paradigm shift. Next, let's take a look at important principles and concepts for moving towards sustainability. As mentioned before, paradigm shift and sustainability apply to the same ideals, actions, and outcomes. The core goal of sustainability is to reduce eco-footprints and build civic culture, mutual assistance, and social cohesion. Sustainability means paradigm shift, lifestyles that fit within natural limits. Housing, food, transportation, everything will be affected. Paradigm shift and sustainability take in environmental, social, and economic concerns. Paradigm shift is not a complicated future utopia. Rather, paradigm shift is simply common sense. Many of the benefits of paradigm shift can happen in our own lives, with family, friends, and neighbors, as soon as we take action. No permission required. There are untold thousands of people all over the country and all over the world who are already engaged in paradigm shift, and they are already enjoying many of the benefits. The need for paradigm shift exists all over the world, but particularly in the United States. Thoughtful estimates have been made that for the entire world to live like the average American would require 5 planet Earths to provide the resources and to process the waste. Reducing ecological footprints is a perfect companion to building community cohesion, social uplift, and environmental restoration. There are many allies and assets to work with in almost any community for paradigm shift. The wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions and permaculture are powerful sets of ideals and principles to assist moving towards sustainability. That wisdom goes like this: care for the natural world, uplift of the spirit, modesty of lifestyle, service to the community, and being accountable for our actions. Permaculture is a set of ideals, principles, and values for designing systems to take care of human needs in ways that are friendly to people and planet. How we prioritize our own time and money is a primary concept of paradigm shift. We invest money and time in paradigm shift instead of the consumer culture. Next are more specific actions on the ground that are appropriate for any city or town moving towards sustainability. Create a citizens' commission to research serious sustainability, to identify and reach out to allies and assets in the community, such as labor, business groups, education, faith groups, community and service organizations, and the media. The commission can draft a sustainability game plan for the community. Next, organize a series of community discussions about moving towards sustainability. What would serious sustainability look like at home, business, transportation, food choices, lifestyle, city policy, and community priorities? Here are some tasks of the city with strong citizen participation. Create and empower neighborhood associations all over town. Neighborhood associations are extremely important tools for moving towards sustainability. Neighborhood associations are composed of people from right there in the neighborhood. NAs can educate, connect, and network with the residents, the city, each other, and more allies in the city. Neighborhood associations can help create neighborhood assistance networks at the street level. The city, neighborhood associations, and individuals should all work together to create eco-villages in suburban neighborhoods and apartment complexes, and tiny home affordable villages as infill. The city should encourage mixed-use redevelopment on parking lots to help bring about 15-minute neighborhoods and affordable housing. New and existing structures, both public and private, can tap in to positive human potential, our greatest renewable resource. Begin the task of setting up a system for taxing non-sustainable products and services over time, such as junk food, gasoline, cars, and suburban development. Assist creating cooperative businesses that fit sustainability. And create financial structures for local people to invest in local projects and businesses that fit sustainability. Benicia's loss of the oil refinery is a perfect opportunity for a community to take a critical look at the growth-based and unsustainable consumer culture paradigm. But the fact is, every city and town should be having similar conversations, given the downward social, political, economic, and environmental trends we're all familiar with. Every one of the on-the-ground actions suggested for Benicia exists in the real world. That's transforming a suburban property, turning an apartment complex into a thriving eco-village, empowering young people with the ideals and values of paradigm shift, mixed-use redevelopment on parking lots, creating mutual support networks, reducing the need for cars, investing in local small businesses and projects that fit sustainability. And again, one cannot overemphasize, a core task for Benicia or any town and city to address the deepening challenges of our time is to empower citizen participation and to identify existing tools, assets, and allies, or create new ones when needed, to turn human potential into citizen action on the ground. You can find more detail on all of these paradigm shift actions, projects, principles, and concepts, and you can contact me on my website, aprimerforparadigmshift.org. The Primer exists to help people take initiative wherever they live on behalf of sustainability, paradigm shift, and positive human potential. This is Jan Spencer coming to you from Eugene, Oregon.
And this is Mark Helpsmeet working on maple syrup in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, thanking Jan for guest hosting today. We'll have Jan's links on northernspiritradio.org, and Jan will be back again in 3 months to share more resources to move us toward a better, more sustainable world. I'll be hosting again next week, so we'll see you then. The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
With every voice, with every song, we will move this world along, and our lives will feel hope.